Federal employees stationed overseas are never really off duty. Some of the worst breaches of etiquette or worse have occurred when people are in fact off the job. At Homeland Security, the Inspector General found a lack of guidance and training for overseas employees for proper behavior after hours. IG John Roth joins me now with what they found. Mr. Roth, great to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so you looked at the policies and procedures connected with how people should behave, at least in Homeland Security, many of which are stationed overseas. Let's begin with a sense of the scope of how many people the department does have outside of the United States.
Well, the department's very large, as you know, with about 225,000 people total, and about 1,500 of them are stationed overseas at any given time.
What is expected of people when they're overseas 24 hours a day?
Well, you know, as a member of the federal workforce while you're overseas, you are really an ambassador for the United States in ways, I think, that you are not when you are, or at least less so than when you are here domestically. So one of the things that DHS needs to stress is to have a sort of a DHS-wide policy regarding overseas conduct. What we have now is really a hodgepodge of different policies, you know, developed by each component, oftentimes as a result of scandals or other sort of historical anomalies, but there hasn't ever been sort of an effort to sit down and write an overarching policy as to how it is that DHS employees need to conduct themselves while overseas.
Because there are some components of DHS that may not have a tradition of being overseas. I'm thinking, say, FEMA is primarily a domestic agency, whereas some of the others, Coast Guard or Customs and Border Protection, may not. Well, they would have people overseas from time to time for various purposes.
Yes. In fact, Customs and Border Protection is the largest component overseas. Almost half of the folks who are overseas are CBP folks who are, doing the preclearance kind of work.
And they're doing that not just Mexico and Canada, but really anyone exporting to the United States.
Correct. And they are stationed all over the world. And as you note, obviously Coast Guard is global, but we have people from U.S. Citizen Immigration Service and as well as ICE who are overseas. So it runs the gamut of a huge portion of DHS. And as I said, each component had certain policies, but it wasn't really particularly comprehensive.
Did any particular incident or set of incidents cause the IG's office, your office, to undertake this look-see?
Well, one of the things that we had experience with was the Secret Service's actions in Cartagena, Colombia. And that was a situation where we thought that there had been a lack of guidance and a lack of understanding as to how individuals ought to appropriately comport themselves. And coupled with that was a lack of training and a lack of understanding as to what was allowed and what was not allowed.
And so what did you find with respect to, in other words, some agencies have no guidance and policy, or is it that they have policy and guidance that is not really being enforced or trained to?
What we found was a lack of comprehensive policies with regard to overseas conduct. So some components would have some discussion of what it means to be overseas, but it really wasn't a comprehensive thing like the State Department has, for example, where, you know, they talk about, you know, sort of the notorious conduct or disgraceful conduct as opposed to sort of simply sticking with a rules-based approach.
And in the case of the Secret Service, what did they have in place that apparently was not followed in Cartagena and also subsequent incidents?
Right. Well, Secret Service is very much a work in progress as they institute policies and training that they didn't have before Cartagena. But, you know, what we found now is that they have good provisions with regard to alcohol consumption, off-duty conduct, and those kinds of things. But, you know, there are other things where, for example, they don't have any policies on what the State Department terms notoriously disgraceful conduct, which, you know, can run the gamut of kinds of things. But, for example, CBP has almost no guidance on overseas conduct, and yet they are one of the biggest components with an overseas presence.
And there's not just a diplomatic component to this. There's also a national security potential also.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, obviously, when folks are overseas, they're subject to different laws and different cultural norms, which I think is something that probably needs to be emphasized more. But again, as you note, there is a national security element to this, and there are elements out there who would you know, love nothing more than to compromise a DHS employee through the use of, you know, intemperate behavior.
We're speaking with John Roth, the Inspector General of Homeland Security. Where should a comprehensive policy originate? Sounds like the Secretary's office.
That's right. And, you know, we were fortunate that almost on the eve of our public presentation of our report, the Undersecretary for Management issued a directive, two-page directive that reinforces some of the things that we were talking about in our inspection report, including, you know, conduct overseas, specifically overseas, including, you know, recreational use of controlled substances, excessive consumption of alcohol, using the services of a commercial sex provider, and any conduct that would disgrace, embarrass, or discredit or subject the criticism that, you know, DHS or the U.S. government. So we were pleased with that kind of a reaction that happened so quickly as a result of our inspection report.
It would seem that this effort to create this policy and the training it requires would be just perfect fit for the unity of effort that Secretary Johnson has initiated for several years now.
Well, that's exactly right. You know, in many of these embassies, the DHS component is fairly significant, and it would include a number of different elements of the DHS. So, you know, this is what we find a lot when we do these inspections and audits, that, you know, as these individual components grow up, there is a need to have an umbrella policy or an umbrella effort to ensure that all the components are working together.
There's an old expression, you know, what happens in Las Vegas stays in Las Vegas, and that the implication there is that when you're in a different environment, you can devolve to the norms of that environment. But I think what you're saying here is even in places where, I don't know, prostitution might be allowed or legal or not frowned on, nevertheless, if it's something that would be prohibited or embarrassing in the United States, you shouldn't do it where it might be accepted overseas either.
That's precisely it, and the converse is true as well. I mean, there are places where laws are more strict than in the United States, for example, with consumption of alcohol in certain parts of the world, and we require our employees to comply with those laws, even though something that might be perfectly legal here is illegal there.
So your specific recommendation then is what for DHS?
It's to create an overarching policy and training for all DHS employees who are going to be stationed overseas.
And what does the department say in response?
The department agrees in principle with that idea, and they're putting together a plan to ensure that there is a training component for those who are stationed overseas. So we believe that the department has been responsive to our inspection here.
Is the State Department something that they could simply adopt almost wholesale, since they've had it for many decades and have experience with it?
Well, certainly that's something that you'd want to look to, is what the State Department's experience has been. Of course, DHS, you know, the large majority of the individuals overseas have a law enforcement function. So it's going to be slightly different, I believe, and I think it's necessary and useful to tailor it to the DHS experience. But obviously we'd need to take a look at the State Department rules with regard to that.
And could they also borrow from the DOD, because they've also had issues with officers misbehaving overseas? There was one general who was dismissed because of drunken behavior, someone who handled nuclear policy and materials.
I think that's probably right. And again, I think it highlights the risks that are involved with overseas conduct that aren't present domestically. So, you know, all those experiences probably need to be rolled into a single document, single policy that DHS can apply to its employees, and then again train against that policy so people understand what the expectations are when they go wheels up.
And you also mentioned some specific activities that really need to be looked at. What's the list of top two or three or four that really ought to be included in such a policy?
Well, certainly this idea of notoriously disgraceful conduct, which the State Department has specific definitions and specific examples of, you know, what that means. And it's, again, not entirely obvious to an individual that certain things that, you know, might occur within the U.S. would simply not be appropriate overseas.
And also alcohol, drugs, prostitution, that kind of thing.
Correct. Even things like spousal abuse, neglect of children, you know, manufacturing or distributing pornography, entering into debts that can't be paid, using your position for profit. Are all things that need to be covered in an overarching policy.
And what about relations and dealings with your counterparts in the foreign host country's government?
Well, that's pre- precisely it. Again, you are a representative, functionally a diplomat of DHS as well as the United States. So, again, an emphasis on the fact that your role is different when you're overseas than when you are at home.
And will you be following up in a year or so to see if they're doing this?
Well, what we do on all of our audits and inspections is that we have a process to follow up on them, and we are certainly going to be looking at this and seeing exactly what gets implemented and determine whether or not that meets the intent of our recommendation. If it does, then we'll close it. If it doesn't, then we'll certainly revisit the issue.